Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I'm always looking for people that can fill in pieces of the puzzle and connect some dots, especially when it comes to what's happening financially and what's happening in our country in many ways. And I'm excited to welcome Mel Madison to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. First and foremost, I want you, for my audience that does not know you, to tell them a little bit about your background, because you have been really in the thick of things for a very long time, especially in the financial world and other worlds.
Sure. So I do come at all of this from a finance background. I worked for over 20 years at various levels of financial services for large, established asset managers like Russell Investments out of Seattle. I also spent a good deal of time in the venture capital funded startup fintech space, during which time I served as CEO for three different FINRA and SEC registered broker dealers. And so really what goes on with me, and I've studied a lot of financial history on my own. I have an MBA in finance from Duke University. And so I've gotten the opportunity through my experiences and my career to really kind of understand, the plumbing, the mechanics of money, how things move around the globe, and what's really driving some of those forces. And the more that I learned, the more I dug into it, the more I went down the rabbit hole, the more I started seeing some really unsettling things that started to worry me. And as things have progressed, I've come now to a point where I really think we're kind of almost looking down the barrel of an economic gun here with the global monetary situation. And I think there's a lot of people in the globalist deep economic state, as I call it, who also see this coming, and they're putting together these plans right now of how to maintain control through the crisis, what they want to do, whether we're talking about things like central bank digital currencies, right. All these types of aspects of it.
Yeah. A big question that has come up several times, not just recently, but since I've been doing this show, is a lot of people are looking back at 2008, certainly from 2000, but certainly what happened in 2008 when the market collapsed and all of that. Many people these days are questioning what really happened there, because, as you know, nobody really went to jail. It was all these banks got bailed out, too big to fail. Many banks, like Rob's bank, was too small to save. And that was hundreds, if not thousands, of banks. Then they came in with all these regulations and essentially they just went forward. So when you look back at 2008, how does that inform where we are now? Is there a correlation? Were they consolidating banking back then for a long term goal, or how do you see that?
Well, they've definitely been consolidating the banks, and they're continuing to do that. They've essentially given special status to what they call the G-SIBs, the globally systemically important banks, which essentially now are the places where people's capital gets driven to out of regional banks or smaller banks around things like FDIC. But I do think, to go back to 2008, that was a real crucial watershed moment, because it was a point in time where if things were left to go their own course, there was a bit of, a penalty to be paid. We needed to kind of pay the piper. But instead of doing that, what we did was we exploded the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve and the money printing. We went from around an $800 billion balance sheet at the Federal Reserve to what we had last year at its peak of $9 trillion. And so this was really unprecedented, what happened with 2008 and then with COVID. And we're moving into a lot more problems down the road with the insolvency of Social Security and Medicare right around the corner at the end of this decade. There's a lot of funny business that's been going on with banks and our capital. And traditionally, and if you wanted to get a little bit into the history of this, of just basically the creation of money through the banking system, but essentially, through fractional reserve banking, which is just a fancy term for the bank can take in certain money from depositors and then loan out a fraction of that. And traditionally, that fraction was, 90%. So they could take $100 from you and loan out 90, and then the cycle goes on and on. And through a term called the velocity of money, money gets created by the banks. So it's another way of printing money. during COVID, they reduced those margin requirements from 10% margin to zero. So banks now, since 2020, have been operating with unlimited leverage, zero margin. Wow. And all of these things, that the banking system, that the economic system really that everything is built upon, it's a giant, you know, Ponzi game that is essentially coming near its end. If you think about like a Bernie Madoff or a, you know, FTX or something, yeah, where, you know, everybody puts their money in, and then when people want the money that they're owed, it collapses. And that's what we call a Ponzi scheme, because the money's not there. That is what our banking system is, right? So everybody has put this debt into the system, given the money to the banks. We do, you're right, become creditors of the banks. And what's even more startling is not only what they've done on the banking side, but what they have done on the brokerage side. And this was something that happened in the 1990s, where through the Uniform Commercial Code, they changed it so that you are no longer the owner of any of the securities or financial assets that you might think you own. And this was put into law. They created a whole new term. They call it a financial security entitlement. And this is in law. And the ultimate owner of all of the financial assets now, since this occurred, is really a company called the DTCC, which is the Depository Trust Clearing Corporation, which a lot of people have never heard of, but they own over $90 trillion of securities and financial assets. They process close to $3 quadrillion a year in settlements. And by law, they are the ultimate owners of the securities that you have in your JP Morgan or your Schwab account or whatever it is. And interestingly enough, this was an organization founded in the 60s. Its original chairman and CEO was a gentleman by the name of William Dentzner, who, although his career is not, you know, completely well known, it is known that he spent years working for the CIA before he founded this organization. And so This is just all part of the setup and the manipulation and the movement now to not only own through the DTCC all our securities and financial assets, but what Larry Fink and the people at BlackRock and the Davos crowd are talking about now, their big thing is the tokenization of assets. So they want to take our homes, our cars, everything, put it on the blockchain, have it legally be owned by this corporation. Now, one last thing I'd add to this, what's very dangerous about it is that in the event of the collapse of the DTCC, according to Article 8 of the Uniform Commercial Code, the creditors of the DTCC have initial claim on those assets, not us. And why would we worry about that? Because the DTCC also happens to be the counterparty manager for the multi-quadrillion derivatives market. So we could have a situation where the derivatives market explodes and the legal creditors will be the will have first claim on all securities and assets, and if they eventually have their way, even of your homes and cars in the event of a derivatives collapse.
It's funny, I looked into this a few years ago. There was also another name, Seeding Company or Seeding Company or something that seemed to also be. So that's when I was digging into this, because I was trying to figure out how it was possible that it looked like all type A stock was going somewhere else and people didn't really own what they were and nobody knew. And I was looking into how BlackRock and Vanguard seemed to own everything. And I came across the DTCC and Seeding Company. And there's also a connection, not just to the CIA, but also to the Bush family in this whole scenario as well. And the banks that they owned, I think, in Houston. So this is something that most American people have zero idea. And then just this week, we see the O'Biden regime put forward a $7.5 trillion budget for 2025. And people are finally, I mean, just average people that have nothing to do with this are looking at all of this and saying, are we fools? What is going on here? And what is the recourse? So maybe talk about that in terms of where we are right now in America and this ridiculous budget, the amount of money we're sending overseas, let alone people think that the money that we're sending to Ukraine is the money. No, we're sending money to countries all over the world, like on this level. How is that happening?
Yes. Well, okay. So I didn't do this for the February numbers, just got released this week, but the Treasury every month, they release monthly outlays and expenditures. They do it in a nice, beautiful 42-page PowerPoint with graphs and everything. And when you look at it, going back to January, something very interesting happened for the very first time, which was in January, we spent more money on net interest expense than we did on national defense. So when you actually look at the monthly expenditures right now, so in January, it was $500 billion on the nose in expenditures. You know, only 12% of that was defense. We, you know, 24% was Social Security, 17% Medicare, 14% was what they call health, which is Medicaid, CHIPS programs. 8% is something they call income security, which is unemployment, the child tax credit. Then you have net interest on the debt, and you have education, which is essentially, you know, student loans. And when you add all that up, you get to 83% of our monthly expenditures in January, 413 of the 500 billion were for interest and essentially welfare programs. And, you know, what's fascinating when you look at it is you can look at a sheet, which, you know, this is a printout of every department in the government. And you might say, like, what is even the biggest department? Where is this money going? And the largest one by far is $1.8 trillion budget this year for the Department of Health and Human Services.
Oh, which, wow.
You know, it's much larger than defense or anything else. It dwarfs it. And that department, by the way, used to be called the Department of Welfare. It was the Department of Health, Education and Welfare. They changed it to Human Services. But essentially, the largest department now in the federal government is the Department of Welfare. And that's where our money's going.
Oh, my God. That's like that that Mott Bailey model where they say, look here, this is what we're saying. But what they're really saying is that. And of course, Health and Human Services. How can you argue with that when you can't argue for welfare? So then add into that. Some people say 11. Some people I talk to from the border say well over 20 million illegals coming into the country. So this is now add that on top of all of this. Is that Health and Human Services money going there, or that's coming from somewhere else, or it's not even on the sheet yet?
Well, I think that the immigration, when you strip away the replacement, or you strip away, oh, the Democrats are getting voters, which all that stuff could be true. But then when you actually just look at it from a pure economic standpoint, what had happened between COVID as well as the Trump era border policies,
right,
this entire economy functions on a massive illegal immigration flow. And we had that more or less stopped for years because of COVID and Trump policies. And I recently read and researched a paper put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, and it shows a graph of the trend line of illegal immigrants coming into the workforce, and it drops off. And the only way you could get back to that trend line in the last 2 years was to have about 10 million illegal immigrants come in.
Wow,
and so
that's interesting.
This was exactly what they wanted to happen, because if they didn't, two things were going to occur. Number one, inflation would continue to get worse, because what would happen is the shortage of labor. And two, it was switching the balance of power from the corporations and the banks to the average American worker. This is why you saw record-setting union contracts or UPS drivers or what had you, is that they were actually going to have to start paying people a livable wage. And this was going to cut into corporate profits and margins. And so they needed an influx of millions upon millions just to get back to trend line. And that's where we're at. So there's a huge, and when you listen to the Federal Reserve speakers, you listen to Powell, I had a print of his speech from, you know, his last meeting. And he talks about, so what happened is we expected the labor market to come back quickly, and it didn't. I'm quoting Jerome Powell here.
Right.
And 2022 was a disappointing year. And, you know, we were thinking, well, maybe we won't get it back. And then it did. And so did immigration. Immigration had come to a halt. But it's getting back into balance. And that's what we want to see.
Wow.
And so that's a quote from Powell. You know, right. Like, this is the economic rationale behind the border. When you look at it through one lens, it seems like absolute ridiculousness. When you look through it through the globalist deep economic state lens, it makes perfect sense. You know, they needed the labor.
That's incredible. I haven't heard anyone explain it like that. That's really, really, it makes a lot more sense too in that realm. Now, I do a lot of following the money, especially when it comes to the global, I call it the octopus of global control. But we have all these groups, the UN, the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, IPCC, all these groups. And then above them, it appears IMF, World Bank, World Trade Organization, and Bank of International Settlements. It appears to me that they are the parent company running planet Earth at the moment. At least they think they are. And unfortunately, a lot of the globalist billionaires that run our NGOs and fund a lot of our campaigns here on the local to the national level of our politicians are involved in that. What is the, when you talked earlier about the CBDC and all of that, what is the CBDC that they're talking about and a lot of this stuff, how does that correlate with, this is probably a higher level question that I should have probably asked you before, but people don't really understand what the BIS, International Monetary Fund, World Bank mean to America. But I just saw this guy from the World Bank talking about the digital ID, digital wallet, central bank digital currency, as if America is already involved. Like this, he wasn't talking about it. And it was like a BIS like that they put online. They weren't even hiding this. But it was the guy from the World Bank basically saying that after COVID, they decided that, you know, everything is global, and that includes America's economy. So what is that structure there? What is the World Bank and Bank of International Settlements and IMF mean to the United States?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is really the global regime that was put into place, you know, at the end of World War II at the Bretton Woods Conference in New Hampshire, where the dollar was set up as the reserve currency, which was doomed from the start. So, you know, John Maynard Keynes, who I'm not a huge fan of, but he's a well-known economist, and he was there, and he realized, he's like, you cannot set up and have it work where the dollar is the reserve currency, because by necessity, other countries then need dollars. And the only way for this to work is going to be for the United States to run perpetual and massive trade deficits. And so what was really happening here, and it took decades to occur, but a lot of the hollowing out of the U.S. manufacturing sector can be traced back to this decision to have the dollar as the reserve currency. Because what it did, while on the one hand, it has great benefits for Americans in the sense that we're able to buy goods more cheaply, because essentially what it is, you create this artificial demand for a dollar, which creates an artificial high price for the dollar, but it also creates an artificially high price for American labor. And so once you put in the dollar as the reserve currency, you are essentially putting us on a path to lose our manufacturing, to import everything from overseas, export dollars. And that's what we really export. We export dollars and we export arms. I mean, that's what the United States does, is essentially it's a financial Ponzi scheme augmented by a massive trillion-dollar arms industry. And it's not a coincidence that when you had like a dot-com bust in 1999, you very quickly afterwards have September 11th. Right. When you had the pullout from Afghanistan, the disastrous pullout from Afghanistan, you almost immediately thereafter have Ukraine. And so this is what the Rothschilds, you know, who were really, you know, masters at this, did. They called it an armed peace. And they always financed both sides of wars. But what they realized was the best situation for them was to finance what they called an armed peace. And in their personal letters, which they used to send in code to one another, the Rothschild partners, They would talk about this, because they had it worked out to a science where they would support both sides of a war. They would, but what would happen is one of those governments or sovereigns would go under and they wouldn't get paid. And they realized, if we can create this armed peace, we can create this perpetual war machine where we're financing this through both sides. And a lot of the industry and the money and the whole history of central banking, when you go back to 1694 and William III and why he set up the Bank of England, it was a way to siphon off gold from the people. William III was broke. He had no money. He had defaulted on some of his debt. He couldn't borrow. He was overtaxing his people and he needed money. And he came up with the idea basically of the modern central bank, which was to go to the people and say, give us your gold. The bankers charge fees, take the gold, give it to William III so he could build a fleet and perpetuate his wars. And what do the people get in return? They got paper notes from the Bank of England. Right. And so this has all been going on. And what really happened, which was amazing, and you know, in 1971, you know, something so important as to leave the gold standard. Right. And if you've ever seen the Nixon video, it's just him going on TV unilaterally and saying, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to temporarily halt the convertibility of the dollar to gold. And like that, the world left thousands of years of sound, of at least a remnant of sound money, because it really wasn't sound money anymore. But they left that. And now what's happened is the fiat currency bubble has gotten to such a point that the only way they're going to be able to perpetuate this is such massive amounts of debt that they're between a rock and a hard place, between inflation and essentially, you know, letting the system crumble. Because if we didn't have the government spending we had, and if we had real inflation numbers reported, this economy is a depression level economy. Organic growth wise, this is we would be in a depression, and they just keep pushing it off and pushing it off. And I feel they've got one more big breath in the bubble. And I think we see the bubble growing in things like Bitcoin, in the stock market, in AI. And I think we've got maybe 1 to 2 more years of them blowing up another big bubble before the big collapse comes later on in this decade.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're going to keep it where it is for Bidenomics. Oh, Biden. It's so scary to watch them lie all the time, constantly to the people, and not even warn them that something terrible is coming down the pike. I mean, it's amazing to me to watch these politicians. Something I wanted to ask you about, too, that's been a big deal and not understood well. It appears that when we changed from Afghanistan to Ukraine war, and people have to understand what you're talking about, the paying for both sides of every war has been all the way back. It can be traced to the French Revolution, if not before, the same people paying for both sides of every war, as I believe is going on right now. But so where we are is right when this whole thing happened, it was like overnight, they flipped the switch from the vaccine and pro and anti-vaccine to pro and anti-Ukraine. So all of a sudden, Ukraine becomes the big thing that happens. And in the meantime, they did all these sanctions on Russia. And what it turns out, though, is that it didn't hurt Russia. In fact, it actually, Russia is doing way better after the sanctions, because then it teamed up with what is now known as the BRICS nations. And so now the BRICS nations have grown not just to the original BRICS nations, but we're talking about 20, including Saudi Arabia. So talk a little bit about that period of time when they put the sanctions on Russia, and how either that backfired or it was on purpose and they knew what was going to happen. But it certainly wasn't what was sold to the public about why they were putting sanctions on Russia. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
Yeah, that was a big misstep in a number of ways. And, you know, by removing Russia from the SWIFT international transfer system, by basically flipping a switch in the Russian central bank had already been de-dollarizing and moving more into gold and getting rid of its treasury holdings. But what, you know, after that Bretton Woods, you know, system was put into place, I mean, most central banks around the world, they reluctantly used, you know, the dollar system, because that was the system in place. If you had a country that did not do that, and these are countries like Libya or Iraq, basically they were destroyed. So and if you did not have an independent central bank that then used the US-based dollar system, you know, you were kicked out. And what happened is these countries, is India, China, the BRICS, some say Mexico might be wanting to join as well, Russia, they all realize this, and they are now significantly reducing their treasury holdings, and they're buying gold. And you have, you know, gold at record high prices, even though you're in the West, in Europe and the United States, there have been a lot of outflows from gold funds. And yet we're at record high prices because these central banks buying hundreds of tons of gold. You know, China is the world's largest gold producer. They surpass South Africa. China forbids the export of gold. China does, they supposedly have like a 2,500 ton
right.
Reserve status, but my research has shown it could be closer to 30,000 tons, and that they're really, and so does India. India, by the way, because of the history of holding gold and silver as your wealth in just individuals, whether it's a jewelry or a tea set or something in India, a lot of families, their whole net worth is in gold and silver. They have over 25,000 tons wow. of gold and silver in the people. Now, the United States Federal Reserve allegedly still has 8,000 tons, which on paper is the largest reserves. But I think it's really not. And I think the BRICS, what they're going to do, they're moving to create their own monetary system at the same time that the West is moving to overhaul its system with central bank digital currencies, and not just, like I said, the digital currency, but the digital tokenization of assets. And it's these entities like the Bank for International Settlements that has a paper here, Blueprint for the Future Monetary System, Improving the Old, Enabling the New. And I think this is really funny, their key takeaway. The tokenization of money and assets has great potential, but initiatives to date have taken place in silos without access to central bank money and the foundation of trust it provides. The foundation of trust. This is from the BIS, which is was a complete Nazi front organization during World War II.
Right.
They did all the back deals to transfer gold from Czechoslovakia's holdings to Berlin, to Hitler, to funnel the war machine. They had members on their board of directors like Emil Pool, who was in charge of dental gold confiscation in the concentration camps. And this is an organization, I mean, five of their directors from the World War II period were arrested for crimes against humanity and war crimes. But surprise, surprise, none of them were hung. They were all either pardoned or given paroles. And they're the same people that the Nazi Third Reich economic plan was put into place post-World War II. It was right. the destruction of sovereignty. It was the creation of a single currency. And it was all to be headquartered in the home of the Rothschild banking clan, Frankfurt, Germany, the home of the European Central Bank. So all of this was put into place, whether the Nazis won or lost. And right. it all has ties to Sullivan and Cromwell, the Bush family, that, you know, they were the lawyers for them. The CIA was located in the same town as Switzerland, was being set up around the same time with the Bank for International Settlements. And so this is just really, you know, a tangled web that I spend a lot of time, you know, trying to.
Me too. I call them the Fourth Reich.
It is the Fourth Reich.
The scariest part about this Reich, as I tell everyone, is that this time they have no allegiance to any flag, to any people, to any religion, to any entity. They are like 1984, power for power's sake. You know, there's that passage in 1984 where they're explaining the state, and they kind of say the Nazis and the Bolsheviks were amateurs compared to what we're doing. We're power for power's sake, and that's what's going on. The scary thing about the Bank of International Settlements as well, not only does it look like the Tower of Babel, but on top of that, they have some kind of immunity and opaque situation similar to the Vatican. Mm-hmm. And the mm-hmm. people have to understand, because right under them is the IMF and the World Bank. And they always say that the Bank of International Settlements is the main bank of the central banks. And nobody ever puts together what you just said, which is, yeah, it is. And mm-hmm. the other thing after I wanted to, because you know so much, this is so great talking to you. So the other thing that happened was another big lie we were fed after World War II was about the Marshall Fund, because mm-hmm. we gave all that money to the Marshall Fund. And then you also brought up that whole situation that also, this was about the ending of nation states, which also included the creation of the EU, which is a complete disaster right now, but they're holding on as if everything's fine. But this was all connected. People have to go back like you're talking about right now and look at what actually happened after World War II, because you brought up also about the crash and then the trauma event and then the crash and then the trauma event. And people have been so easily, just like with COVID, lured into their own demise at times when we're easily susceptible to being taken advantage of. The people you're talking about, these are the people that also say never let a good crisis go to waste. And here we are, the American people don't seem to fully also understand that we, after the Patriot Act was passed, they created a total surveillance state. I don't think anyone in America right now is not being surveilled in some way. And then you had not too long ago them come out and put in an executive order, not just 14067 about the central bank digital currency, but then that tax order for the IRS that people were all going crazy about, the 87,000 agents. The scarier part in there to me was the AI and ledger technology that would then I'm just asking you if this is what I'm right. It assumes that what they're saying there, from what I read, and also the ledger technology put in to the infrastructure bill, is that all of our money would be on some kind of blockchain where there's no middleman with the taxes anymore. They're just taking them out. I mean, this seems like total world totalitarianism, and the financial system is the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, no, it's been the mechanism for control, really going back to that forming of the central bank. For hundreds of years during the medieval period, the main control mechanism of the people was through land. And it really switched around 300-400 years ago to controlling people's money. A lot of people, they make decisions based on, well, the right decision is what's ever going to make me the most money. The wrong decision is what's... And so they're then able to essentially control you through money. But money has been losing its control, you know, efficiencies, you know, so you can actually measure this like economically through what they call the velocity of money. It's like kind of the amount of money in the system and how fast it goes around. And so the whole system is beginning to break down, and they're very worried about it. And this international state that you mentioned, this has been their dream for decades. It goes back into the 1800s. You can read about, you know, these international financiers talking about, wow, wouldn't it be great if we could just, you know, and get rid of these borders, get rid of the sovereignty, get rid of all of this and have this global financial system, which things like the Bank for International Settlements, which it is an economic Vatican for the central bankers. So this was established at a international treaty in The Hague. It gave them, there is no accountability at None. The Bank for International Settlements. No. Their property in Switzerland, the Swiss government is not allowed to go onto their property by law. It's like an embassy. People in the Bank for International Settlements, they can travel with diplomatic pouches. They are immune from prosecution for any duties carried out on behalf of the Bank for International Settlements. They have like a triple sprinkler system. They have underground bunkers. They have everything set up so that no one can ever go here. And what the Bank for International Settlements did is they essentially acted almost like a modern day, you know, Knights Templar, where they basically held the gold. So the gold was all under the Bank for International Settlements. And then if one central bank wanted to transfer it to another central bank, the Bank for International Settlements could just adjust it on their ledgers and their accounts. And this was how, when Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, he was able to get the Czechoslovakian gold, because the Czech central bank held their gold in a BIS account in the vaults underneath the Bank of England in London. And the BIS is the one who signed off on the transfer from the Czechoslovakia to Hitler. And Hitler wanted physical delivery of his gold. And so the BIS, through their network, actually, they didn't have to take the gold from London. They changed another sub-account on another vault they had in Amsterdam, and then they put it on trucks and shipped it to Berlin. So this is all part of this international cabal that has just been, you know, facilitating it. And you mentioned the ledger. So this is what they also say, where they say a new type of financial market infrastructure. They want a unified ledger, they call it, could capture the full benefits of tokenization, combining central bank money, tokenized deposit, tokenized assets on a programmable platform. And that word programmable is key, because what that means is now they can decide, you know, they call it financial inclusion. They can decide who gets better interest rates. They can decide how much money, you know, can be allotted to fossil fuels and green energy. And they can start to put in all their incentives through programmable money, so that not only can they track transactions and assets, but then they can use it as a mechanism of social control.
Yeah, social credit score. They have it in China. And you know, it's crazy. A lot of people, I covered Davos, the 5 days. My friend Norbin Laden was on the ground there in Davos during their last meeting. And, you know, it was being covered more than it normally is. I mean, people are waking up to this. I mean, you're explaining it better than anyone. I hope you'll come back because this is going to evolve over the next, you know, while this war goes on. It is literally freedom. And in my opinion, I look at the Agenda 2030 and the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, and it's for the people you're talking about. It's sustainable for them. It is actually walking us into a full track and trace surveillance, totalitarian, AI controlled, algorithm controlled prison. And what you're saying, too, is the other side of that is you won't be able to get if they have this and it's worldwide, it's not American, that they would be able to turn you down for loans. They would be able to turn for all people if you put something on the because these same people that you're talking about are also pushing all the things to control misinformation and disinformation and all of that. And then when we were covering Davos, nobody was talking about it. The bells of the ball, the VIPs at Davos was the Chinese Communist Party. And they were treating them. And nobody in America was like, well, what do you see the Chinese Communist Party there? Because people separate that they're not we're in on it. And they have to be. Where does China fit into this whole thing? And are they at this very top level, the BIS level? Are they working together or are they mm-hmm. separate?
Yes, no, they're working hand in hand. They have a number of projects that go back decades. One of them called Project Aurum, Aurum being the Latin word for gold, which is one of their multiple central bank digital currency projects. And it's primarily with what they call the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. And it is basically a wing. I mean, the China has been on the forefront. China already has a pilot digital renminbi, the digital currency. Right. And so this is all part and parcel. And it's like you said, the World Economic Forum. I have here like a quote, economist Ishwar Prashad bragged about how CBDCs could be used to limit your purchases of whatever things bureaucrats happen not to like, right. You know, Second Amendment things. And then the other thing that this allows is it allows for them to basically, you know, do universal basic income, which they want to have as that this control mechanism. This is from the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. Universal basic income, UBI, a type of social economic program where all citizens regularly receive a monetary transfer, may provide an elegant solution. Large-scale implementation of UBI, however, may require further innovations on a technological and economic fronts. This paper lays out a proposal for leveraging Web3 technologies, digital transactions, the blockchain, and other programmable ledgers as a scalable and efficient UBI implementation. So they're wanting to put all of the, and I think part of it is that they realize that this system is going to head to a reset. And the collapse, it goes really to the insolvency of Social Security, which is, so the Social Security Trust Fund peaked out in 2020 at $2.9 trillion. And now we're just going down, 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 down. So we are, you know, according to the CBO, going to run out of money in 2034. But that assumes no recessions. It doesn't assume all the inflation. It's probably going to happen sooner, closer to 2030 or the end of this decade. And when that happens, there's going to be like a $500 billion a year shortfall that when you add that to the national debt that's already spiraling, like this whole system is just on this verge of a collapse, and they know that. And when they do a reset, they want to do it digitally, and they want to be able to essentially confiscate all the goods through the DTCC. Right. And then they have everything. And then they say to us, okay, we have everything now. Do you want a loan, you know, and get us back into the debt slavery? So it's a confiscation debt slavery game replayed again and again.
I'm loving this conversation so much. You are clearing up a lot for me. Now, it appears that not only the Great Reset, see, because a lot of people, I was watching the pandemic thinking this is about the monetary system. The whole time I'm saying to people, no, this is bigger than that. It's worldwide. They're all talking about build back better, which essentially means to destroy what is, to build it back for them. I'm watching the Agenda 2030. I'm positive the 17 Sustainable Development Goals are sustainable for the international banking cartel. And I'm watching all this go. And now we're in a place where we, the people of the United States, are walking into, because I saw that not only did Obama sign us on to Agenda 2030 in 2015, but Biden and his friends had a big event at the White House in September of 2023, celebrating halfway to Agenda 2030 and the globalist goals. And if you actually look into there, they're talking about joining also the international ID, like they were trying to roll out the vaccine passport. But now they're talking about that the United States is apparently paying for most of what Agenda 2030 is promising. And then on top of that, something else came up that I've talked about quite a bit and it kind of got knocked down, I think, because probably people like you and me were like waving the flag, like, this is not good. But they went to Glasgow right after O'Biden got in, and Bloomberg and Kerry and the New York Stock Exchange, they wanted to turn all natural resources into like some kind of natural asset class that would then transfer all of this to like that being a stock market. I mean, these people are godless people as far as I'm concerned, and they don't have any respect for humanity or humans. I call them the parent company running planet Earth. But frankly, they wanted to try to do this natural asset class. And though I saw that they put up the SEC and the New York Stock Exchange kind of went underground when people started kind of realizing what they were talking about. But when you saw them talking about this new basically resources, stock exchange, that would be like air, water, land, humans, animals, all that, that they would control, the same people you're talking about would control this as a kind of a new monetary system. So what was that about? Did you see that and think, oh, I see what they're doing here. It's very nefarious.
Yeah, I mean, so the BIS, for example, their big things with beyond central bank digital currencies is, number one, they're involved in all kinds of other things that you don't even know because they don't put their name on it, right. But it takes place in their building. So there's like you know, a financial board that works from the Bank of International Settlements headquarters that's basically an international body that is setting up all of the bank regulations. This is the Basel III endgame that some of these people are talking about. And right. A lot of people, they don't want to call it the Bank for International Settlement, so they call it Basel, but that's where the BIS is headquartered, of course. And this is literally like an international body deciding what is the U.S. law is going to be. When they meet every 2 months, Jerome Powell, Christina Lagarde from the ECB, the head of the People's Bank of China, they right. all come together in Basel and they have completely secret meetings. They don't even keep the minutes. You're not allowed to know who attends and who doesn't. Everything is done complete confidentiality. They have their elegant dinner in this 18th floor room designed by the same architects that did the Bird's Nest stadium in China. They eat the best food, the best wines. They sit around, they create the global agenda. It's all unelected leaders in Basel, Switzerland on sovereign ground, essentially, central right. banker sovereign ground, you know, creating and coordinating economic policy. And they refuse to even, you know, let the press know like who's attending these meetings. And this is some of the most important and consequential decisions for the world economy. And it affects everything from mortgage rates to gas prices. And their big push is on the climate change push. They love the climate change issue and all this, you know, kind of green tech that the BIS supports. And so that's all part of their plans. It's part of controlling not only the economic world and our lives and what we see on the media, but they also want to control the land, the sky, and the ocean. So right. they want to control it of it all. They want it all.
I mean, and they're going for it because what I tell people when they say that and there's very smart people out there, people that have MBAs from Duke like you that refuse. They think it's just conspiracy theory. And I say, go look at their websites at BIS, World Bank, IMF, all the tentacles of the UN, UNESCO, World Economic Forum, even the Vatican have Agenda 2030 as like their focus. And the first thing it says basically is that nation states no longer work. Global problems require global governance. I don't know why people aren't actually getting it or can't recall when George H.W. Bush went on the floor of the UN and said that we had a new world order being run by the UN and people clapped like it was a good thing. But because of people like you and others out there that are kind of demystifying this, it's so funny. We're probably around the same age. And growing up, it was like Switzerland was neutral. Just don't look at Switzerland. And now you see like the World Economic Forum, the BIS, CERN, which is a whole nother situation yeah. there, and World Health Organization. And a lot of people, luckily, I think, are waking up just in time. Now, let's reverse back. You know, it's also funny. I didn't know for my whole life until probably COVID that there was fake financial news. I would think that like the one place that people would actually be like have ethics and integrity would be in the financial news. Now I realize it's just as fake as all the other news and has been for a very long time, which is why you demystifying all of this is really helpful. So let's say whoever your candidate is, say it's Donald Trump, and he calls you and he says, listen, we're in serious trouble. I don't know what to tell the people. I don't know what to tell anything. I'm looking at all of this. And what are your suggestions? Let's say you were called to be on a board to assess what's going on, which you've already done. What are some moves that we can make that can actually help us in some way? Because this seems like a runaway train. And I'm curious your thoughts on any solutions.
Well, I think if we ultimately want to solve this massive, you know, Ponzi scheme, fraudulent money, that ultimately what Trump would need to do is what Andrew Jackson did, which is abolish the nation's central bank. So the Federal Reserve is our third bank. I'm sure you know this. A lot of your listeners, I'm sure, know it. For those that don't.
You're great at this. I'm going to have you on a lot, I hope. Go ahead.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So we had our first national bank, which was essentially the brainchild of Alexander Hamilton. You know, Jefferson was totally against this. One of the first quotes I have in my book is from Jefferson, that banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies.
Yes.
And, you know, I have two other quotes, Rothschild saying, you know, allow me to print and coin a nation's money. I care not who makes its laws. And the third one is J.P. Morgan from his 1912 testimony to the U.S. Congress, money is gold, nothing else. And so what happened here really is you had all of the, what ultimately needs to happen is we had this first central bank. It was given a 20-year charter, and Congress and the American people were against it. The charter did not get renewed. A little bit later, they did the second central bank of the United States. And Andrew Jackson, when he came into office, he paid off the debt, and they again refused to renew the central bank's charter. And so for like a 100-year period, basically almost, we did not have a central bank in this country. And I think ultimately what we need to do is we need to abolish the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
So the Federal Reserve, if you go to the Bank of Cleveland's website, there's an FAQ, like who owns the Federal Reserve? And it tells you right there, this is a quote from the Federal Reserve website, while the Board of Governors, the public people, you know, Jerome Powell, is an independent government agency, the Federal Reserve banks, these are the 12 regional banks, the New York Fed, the Cleveland Fed, the Federal Reserve banks are set up like private corporations. Member banks hold stock in the Federal Reserve banks and earn dividends. And then they appoint the board of these banks. So then you go, you look who's on the board. And it's like, you know, CEO of IBM. And it's someone that used to work in the defense industry. And who is really controlling the Federal Reserve and the central banks? It's not the Jerome Powell that you see on TV.
Right.
It's who's the board of directors at these reserve banks, which is really setting the monetary policy. And so what I believe we need to do is we need to go back to the United States issuing money without debt. We do not have to go through the banks, through the banking cartel, which is the Federal Reserve. We can, as a sovereign nation, you know, like Kennedy did, like, you know, Lincoln tried to do, like, and this is dangerous. And, you know, when people try to do this, they usually wind up dead.
I know.
But, you know, that's unfortunately what tends to happen when you threaten this global cabal. And so that's what I think ultimately is the big solution is to really say, look, we either need to abolish the Fed or redo it. Now, this would cause instability in the markets, but we could essentially stop paying interest, because this whole game of interest is a joke anyways. A quarter of our debt is held at the Federal Reserve. So what we do is we pay interest, and then they just send the interest back to the Treasury. So we're going through this. It's just such a ridiculous, convoluted system that we don't need to have into place. And if we came out and Congress said, look, we are going to spend within our means, we're going to restructure the U.S. Treasury debt, and we're no longer going to go through a Federal Reserve system, and we instituted some sort of a governing policy. I frankly think gold works better than anything else, but if there's some other way to do it that other smart people can think of, that's great. But what gold does is it acts as that, you know, counterweight to the unlimited spending, which eventually leads to the runaway inflation, which is where I think ultimately we're going to be heading with this, because I don't see any way out other than a reset or likely another massive round of quantitative easing, where they ultimately continue to buy this debt, we pay out the interest on the debt and then it gets paid back. That's why when I look at my monthly treasury reports, there's two numbers. There's net interest on the debt and there's gross, because the you know, a lot of this money comes in through the Federal Reserve. And so this is all part of a massive economic scheme for control. It, you know, it's my area that I research, but you have a lot of awesome guests on that research it from other more geopolitical angles or the political side. But this is all part of that same game plan that they have to essentially, you know, manipulate and control us.
So important. It's so, I mean, this is one of the best shows I've done in a long time. And I'm going to tap you a lot up going forward, because we need solutions, and the American people are being lied to on such a massive scale. You know, you look at it and you see, like, how can these people live with themselves? The people doing the press conferences or the news, or these people that are trusted as financial news channels. And you just look at it and you think, oh my God, they don't even care. They don't care. And they're obviously working with these people, but you've done amazing, incredible work. I have a million other questions, but I've kept you a long time. And I also want to mention that instead of writing a book, you know, that would be tedious for people, you actually wrote a novel that includes a lot of this information, which I think is a very smart way to give people information. And it's an amazing book. So I wanted you, before we let you go, to talk a little bit about your book and what inspired you to write it and write it that way. Go ahead with that too.
Well, I did want to do that. And thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, I wrote a financial thriller. It's called Quoz, Q-U-O-Z. It's kind of a play off The Wizard of Oz, which is actually a monetary, you know, allegory. In the book, Dorothy wears, you know, the silver shoes. There's the yellow brick road is the gold standard. And then the false wizard, is the Emerald City, is the fakeness of the dollar and essentially the political game behind it. And there was a lot going on with monetary policy at the time Frank Baum wrote it, with the taking away of silver. It was called the crime of 1873, the crime of 73, when they took silver away from our monetary side of things, which it had been since the founding. And so what Quoz does is in a, I hope, a compelling read, it examines a lot of these ideas, and it's essentially centers around the central bank chiefs of Russia, India, and China getting ready to subvert the economic system of the West with a crash, so that they can come in with a new global central bank digital currency. There's a lot of stuff behind the scenes. There's, you know, corrupt U.S. senators in on the game. And yeah. So there's also a lot of, like, information that I try to put in there, where I'll mention things like the crime of 73, or I'll mention Executive Order 6102 by FDR to confiscate the country's gold. Or, you know, I talk about, you know, what's really happening with the monetary system, the entitlement spending, and how this happens. And I try to do that in a thriller. So if people are interested, it's available wherever books are sold, right. Or you can just search Quoz, Q-U-O-Z, financial thriller, or check out my website, melmattison.com, M-E-L-M-A-T-T-I-S-O-N.com.
Great. Well, we're going to have you on a lot. And I have to tell you, I'm so grateful I found you. The book is amazing. And people should get that book, because it tells you all this information you need to know in a good thriller that'll keep you engaged. But at the same time, there's a lot of history in there that you haven't been told. He told you some of it today, but there's a lot to know. And the American people really do have to start to really deal with life on life's terms and truth as it stands to protect themselves. I'm a big fan of gold. I have a partner that's really taught me a lot at Beverly Hills Precious Metals. I have on a lot. And, you know, whatever people have to do, they just have to be honest and really assess what's going on. And Mel has a lot of that information. So go to his website. The links are below. I recommend the book. Get the book. You'll learn a lot. And you'll also enjoy your time learning it, which is, again, a great way to learn is through fiction. A lot of people are doing that these days because the concepts are so heavy and people don't want to really admit that what they've been told all these years isn't true and benefits not them, but others. So it's a good way to do it through fiction. And I love that. And we'll see you again soon. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much, Mel.
Thank you.
It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you. And that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko was ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko. Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today. ¶¶